The headline, Salman Rushdie, the British author of a blasphemous anti-Islam book, is stabbed at an event in the U.S. state of New York. The U.S. says it will continue to fly and sail around the Taiwan Strait, apart from working on a roadmap for extensive trade with Taipei. And the U.S. Justice Department says FBI agents took top-secret files during a recent raid on former President Donald Trump's Florida residence. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Salman Rushdie, the author of an anti-Islam book, has been attacked on stage at an event in the U.S. state of New York. A man stabbed the blasphemous novelist in the neck and abdomen when he was about to give a lecture. Rushdie is now on a ventilator, and his agent says that he has suffered damage to his liver and one eye. The suspected attacker has been detained. Police, however, say they have no indication of a motive.
We don't have any indication of a motive at this time, but we are working with the FBI, the sheriff's office, and we will determine what the cause of this was or what the motive for this attack was.
Police have identified the attacker as 24-year-old Hadi Matar from New Jersey. They are assuming that he acted alone. Rushdie published his blasphemous novel, The Satanic Verses, in the late 80s. The novel triggered out an outcry across the Muslim world. The United States has a pledge to boost trade with Taiwan despite tensions with China over its growing ties with the island. Washington will unveil a new trade plan and conduct air and maritime transits through Taiwan Strait within days. That is according to the White House coordinator for Asia-Pacific issues. Kurt Campbell says the U.S. is responding to what he called China's provocative behavior on Taiwan. He accused China of using the recent Taiwan visit by the U.S. House Speaker as a pretext of trying to change the island's status quo. Taipei has hailed Washington's new pledges, saying China's intimidation has strengthened the unity of the global democratic camp. China claims Taiwan as its own territory and has repeatedly warned against the island's growing ties with Washington. Tensions have been escalating since House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan earlier this month. FBI agents have found top-secret documents during a raid on the residence of former U.S. President Donald Trump. The Justice Department says 11 sets of classified documents, including top-secret files, were removed from Trump's Florida home. The department also says the former president is believed to have violated a federal law that bans possession of national defense information. Media reports say these are secret files on U.S. nuclear weapons. Trump, however, rejects this. He has called the search political retribution, claiming that he had no stored classified information. The FBI is yet to make a comment amid criticism of the move by leading Republicans. This is the first time that the property of a former president has been searched as part of a criminal probe. An Iranian flag tanker seized by Greece in April is now reloading its oil shipment for return to Iran. Iran's embassy in Athens broke the news, adding that Lana tanker will soon depart for the country. The development comes after the Greek Supreme Court canceled an earlier order for the seizure of the consignment. The ship was earlier detained by Greek authorities and its oil cargo was confiscated by the United States in late July. It triggered tensions, of which Tehran called Athens' move an act of robbery. Iran has also detained two Greek tankers for violations in the Persian Gulf waters. The Iranian president says his administration will not tie the country's problems and progress to sanctions or their removal. Ebrahim Raisi says the progress and economy of the country will not be kept back on account of other people's smiles and scowls. He vowed that growth and development would continue forcefully despite enemies' threats and sanctions. The Iranian president stressed that the Islamic Republic has never abandoned the negotiation table. He was referring to the diplomatic efforts to revive the 2015 nuclear deal, or the JCPOA. The agreement was left hanging by a thread after the unilateral withdrawal of it in 2018. Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlüt Çavuşoğlu has revealed that back in October last year, he held talks with his Syrian counterpart Faisal Miqdad. During the talks, the top Turkish diplomat said the Syrian crisis would be resolved if Damascus holds talks with opposition groups, Rashid Saglam reports.
Turkey's Foreign Minister Mevlüt Çavuşoğlu says he had a side talk with Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad on the sidelines of the Non-Aligned Movement Summit in October last year. The Turkish minister added he suggested a reconciliation to take a place between the Syrian government and the opposition, noting that without such a step, Syria will continue to face a crisis. Çavuşoğlu said that the EU and the international community would support a ceasefire in the war-torn country, and that no country would help in Syria's rebuild process if a ceasefire is not achieved.
To prevent the division of Syria, there must be a strong administration in Syria. The will that can dominate every corner of its lands can only be achieved through unity and solidarity. We need to bring the opposition and government together for reconciliation. There will be no permanent peace otherwise.
Some believe such a revelation is a signal indicating Turkey is preparing for its cross-border military operation in northern Syria. In recent weeks, the Turkish army has been sending reinforcements to northern Syria near the town of Tel Rifat. The town is under the control of Kurdish YPG forces, a U.S.-backed militia that Turkey considers the armed wing of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, known as PKK.
I think the timing of this announcement comes as Turkey's preparing for a cross-border military operation to secure the border area and push back Kurdish forces. A reconciliation between the government and the opposition will not only bring peace to Syria, but also Turkey, a country that has been directly affected by the Syrian war from terrorist attacks to the refugee crisis.
Some analysts believe Turkey has long been serving its own agenda in Syria. For example, by supporting some opposition groups inside Syria who served Ankara's interest in securing its borders and pushing Kurdish forces back. It might be soon to say whether Ankara has changed its strategy in regards with Syria. What is clear for Turkey is that fighting or defeating the Kurdish militants cannot guarantee its security. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Pro-Palestine activists took to the streets of Austria's capital, Vienna, amid international fury over Israel's murderous bombing of Gaza, which saw scores of innocent civilians killed. Robert Carter has traveled to Vienna and has witnessed local action as demands for justice continue to grow.
Hundreds of pro-Palestine activists marched through central Vienna on Friday to vent their anger following Israel's recent bombardment of Gaza. They joined thousands of other protesters worldwide who were shocked into action after the three-day Israeli offensive left over 350 Palestinians wounded, 46 dead, including 16 children, according to Palestinian officials.
Following the recent violence against Gaza, shocking images of children suffering and dying went absolutely viral on social media. Yet despite these disturbing images doing the rounds, they haven't been routinely featured in Western mainstream media circles. In fact, it's incredibly rare for any images of Palestinian suffering to be published at all.
They are suffering every day, every single day. People got arrested, children got arrested, people got murdered. Gaza, what we saw last week in three, 4 days, got bombed. They have no electricity. They have no way to go anywhere. They are blocked from the Israeli occupation.
I need to tell my people that we are standing up for them. We are resisting from abroad. So you have to stay strong. And I'm an artist, so it is... it is a duty for me to raise the voice for the ones who are not heard.
We need to raise our voice, and Austria cooperates with Israel, and that's our what we are doing here also, is that we want to make people aware of this, that Austria is cooperating with Israel.
Despite regular condemnation of Israeli aggression by human rights groups, Palestinians continue to suffer while the Western world looks on, leaving few options left for Palestinians driven to fight for their very survival. Robert Carter, Vienna.
Moving on, London rights groups, including the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Friends of Al-Aqsa and Stop the War Coalition, have joined forces to call on the British government to stop supporting Israel and its aggression against Palestinians as casualties mount from the regime's latest bombardment of Gaza. Demonstrators demand whoever takes over as the next British Prime Minister to stop supporting Israel. Amina Taylor.
Ones of tragedy, injustice and destruction that prompted a group of London rights organizations to call an emergency demonstration in support of Palestine and Palestinians. The Israeli bombardment of Gaza was the worst it's been since the May 2021 war that killed 260 Palestinians and destroyed thousands of homes and businesses. This new assault cost the lives of at least 47 Palestinians. A third of the scores killed were children. For those attending the demonstration opposite Downing Street, the official residence of the British Prime Minister, they needed to be present to raise their voice against the injustice.
What we've witnessed over the last few days is very familiar, but no less horrific. Once again, Israel has been bombing the Palestinian people in Gaza, claiming a right to self-defense. There's a reality here that any form of violence that is used to enforce occupation, used to enforce apartheid, used to enforce settler colonialism is by definition illegitimate. It is the Palestinian people who have a right to defence and to protect themselves.
One of the main themes linking the speakers at this event is the fact that the Israeli aggression is only made possible by the tacit support of states like the British, and that Palestinian blood remains on British hands.
The UK has obligations under international humanitarian law and the Geneva Convention to look after the people who are occupied rather than stand with the oppressor, with the world's 21st century apartheid state. They must stop, they must support the Palestinians in real terms, not through words, two-state solution, which means absolutely nothing, but in sanctioning Israel, because that's the next thing that needs to happen.
Your policy on the Palestinians has to change. Justice has to prevail. And the way the hypocrisy, the way they do deal with the Palestinian issue and other issues like the Ukrainian issues, for example, is at least we can say a hypocritical way of dealing with it. Therefore, we are here today to raise our voice and tell them that this is not acceptable.
Though a ceasefire is supposed to be in force, commentators point out that this simply means Israel has moved its campaign of aggression to other parts of occupied Palestine, including Nablus, where there have already been casualties, raising the specter of an escalation resulting in further Palestinian blood being shed. Amina Taylor, London.
The EU foreign policy chief has admitted that the bloc applies double standards when it comes to the wars in Ukraine and Palestine.
We are often criticized for double standards, but international politics is to a large degree about applying double standards. We do not use the same criteria for all problems.
Borrell made the remarks in an interview with a Spanish daily. He was speaking on why Brussels is more willing to help Ukraine than the people of Gaza. He also said that it is the West's, quote, moral imperative to support Kiev against Moscow. Borrell shirked responsibility for resolving the situation in the besieged Gaza Strip, adding that it is out of the EU's hands. Meanwhile, the top official blamed the U.S. for the tensions in occupied Palestinian territories. The U.S. has been a staunch supporter of the Israeli regime. Mid-August marks 1 year since the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan. Political change opened a new chapter in the war-torn country, affecting the lives of millions. Rahmatullah Bakhwan reports.
In mid-August last year, the Taliban took control of Afghanistan and the Western-backed government collapsed. On its anniversary, the Afghan people have not forgotten what they went through during this period. Economic collapse triggered by the U.S. seizure of nearly $9 billion in Afghan assets and cuts in global aid has been one of their main struggles. Afghans lived through a harsh winter with little food. Based on a poll by Gallup Institute, nearly all Afghans rated their lives as poorly enough to be considered suffering. Meanwhile, some neighboring countries and international bodies rushed aid to the country.
We witnessed that after the Taliban takeover, people sold their children and body organs to put food on the table. I personally lost my job and have been unemployed for months. Millions of others were unable to make ends meet due to food and cash scarcity. I urge the U.S. and the international community to release frozen Afghan funds and let the flow of aid. Afghans can no longer bear the ongoing miseries.
The security situation in the meantime has been far better than in the past two decades. That's to say, people experienced less violence and conflict this year. However, the occasional attacks by the Daesh terrorist group continue to haunt the community.
Previously, our people were living with the U.S. bombardments on their territories. Under the pretext of the war against terror, the U.S. pushed terror in Afghanistan for 20 years and violated all rights of Afghans. Since the Taliban have come to power, our country has been more secure and peaceful. I hope the Taliban succeed in cracking down on Daesh terrorist group and tightening security for all.
The Taliban, on the other hand, failed to gain international recognition. Afghans and the global community have criticized the Taliban for not forming an all-inclusive government.
This week marks the one-year anniversary of the Taliban takeover. To date, the Taliban have been unable to form a government representing all walks of Afghan society and protect their rights. In Afghanistan's history, no government has been successful without securing national legitimacy and being inclusive. The Taliban should learn from the past, seek fair engagement with Afghans, and be flexible against the global community.
All things considered, international bodies and rights groups continue to engage with the de facto Taliban to advocate for the rights of Afghans and address their needs. They also have been calling on the Taliban to open girls' school as soon as possible. 1 year into the Taliban government, Afghans are calling on the international community to help the country's economy and force the U.S. to release its frozen assets. At the same time, they say the new government should engage more in diplomacy with other countries to improve the situation in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
Former President Donald Trump denounced an FBI executed search of his Mar-a-Lago estate in Palm Beach, Florida, decrying it as political persecution. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Chris Walker, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Trump describes FBI's Mar-a-Lago search as dark times for the United States. Here's more. Former President Donald Trump denounced an FBI executed search of his Mar-a-Lago estate in Palm Beach, Florida, decrying it as political persecution. "These are dark times for our nation," Trump wrote in his statement, which was published as the FBI was conducting the search. Trump described his home as being under siege, raided, and occupied by a large group of FBI agents. The search was conducted after the U.S. Department of Justice obtained a warrant to enter the former president's home to investigate whether he had mishandled and inappropriately removed documents from the White House, according to Politico. Such warrants must be signed by a federal judge, and some legal experts have suggested that because of Trump's political status, the warrant would also require the approval of all levels of the department, including from Attorney General Merrick Garland, though the DOJ wouldn't confirm whether or not he had authorized the search. After several hours, the FBI seized an undisclosed number of paper records from Mar-a-Lago. Despite the fact that Trump has been obstinate and unaccommodating throughout several investigations he has faced over the past few years, the former president claimed in his statement that he had been working and cooperating with investigators prior to the raid. "Nothing like this has ever happened to a former president of the United States before," Trump said, a statement that is factually correct. Trump called the search of his home a weaponization of the justice system and an attack by radical left Democrats who desperately don't want me to run for president in 2024. Trump said, "They even broke into my safe." The search occurred several months after the National Archives retrieved other documents from the property. Earlier this year, federal authorities removed multiple boxes of records, including some that contained documents with a top-secret classification that Trump had taken from the White House to Mar-a-Lago in an apparent violation of Presidential Records Act. Legal experts defended the search. The FBI could only execute a search warrant if a federal judge found probable cause that a crime was committed and that evidence of that crime would likely be found at the place to be searched. Given that this was the property of a former president, a judge unquestionably took that responsibility very seriously, said Noah Bookbinder, a former federal prosecutor and current president of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, adding, "No one was casual about this." The fact that the search apparently didn't leak until basically when word came from Donald Trump himself shows the FBI and the Justice Department conducted this search by the book and a high degree of integrity. Journalist and historian Garrett Graff tweeted about the investigation. Asha Rangappa, a former FBI special agent, suggested that the raid had national security implications. Rangappa said having unsecured classified documents at Mar-a-Lago presents an ongoing national security threat, especially given the amount of traffic going through there. No doubt, foreign governments are sending intel agents there.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. Britain's economy is faltering amid a cost-of-living crisis and the highest inflation it's seen in decades. The economy contracted by 0.1% in the 3 months to June, with a recession predicted for the end of the year. The Office for National Statistics blames the contraction on a fall in services output. Last week, the Bank of England said it expects the economy to enter recession in the fourth quarter. The recession would be the largest since the 2008 financial crisis. And just recently, the Bank of England raised interest rates by the biggest margin in nearly three decades to ride out inflation mainly caused by soaring energy and fuel prices. We'll try to find out the reasons for this downward spiral on tonight's Spotlight. Joining us for the program, we have economic analyst Shabir Rezvi, joining us from London. And we also have Mahmoud Refat, president of the European Institute for International Law, who's with us from Stockholm.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Rezvi in London, Britain. As we've reported now, on the brink of recession, official figures show the country's economy contracted in the second quarter of this year. Did this news come as a surprise to you, and what do you see as the underlying causes for this contraction?
Hello, good evening. Look, the UK economy, obviously at one level, has contracted, as you quite rightly pointed out. And in the sort of economic analysis of all economies that say that a second quarter dip in growth will be a recession, technically. But as we know, recently in the USA, similar situation happened, and the Reserve Bank, Mr. Biden, and all of them started coming out saying that really it's not a recession. So maybe the language will also change in UK, whereby the definition of a recession may also come on the agenda. That's one issue on a sort of a theoretical level, if you like. But what's really sort of hurtful and is really paining the mass of the public here is the cost of living crisis, fuel sort of prices going up recently. Only a few days ago, it was announced that the average fuel cost is likely to be over £4,000 a year. That is almost double what people were paying almost a year ago, and likely to go up again in October, perhaps January in 2023 as well. So there are a whole host of issues that are going on and are having an impact on the economy. People's wages and salaries have not increased at all over the last 12 years since the Tory government has been in power. An interesting point to note is that only 11 years ago, this month, actually perhaps on 11th of August 2011, we had riots in UK. London, Birmingham, Manchester, all the major cities experienced huge riots. So I don't know if people are pushed in such a direction where by in winter, when they will have no choice whether to heat their homes or to sort of forego food that they need to buy. So that may push people to take to the streets and have demonstrations. So it's quite a, and I'm not trying to portray it as a dramatic situation that may happen, but the reality is that public servants, whether they're doctors, nurses, only today I was talking to one of the doctors and he said that effectively his own salary hasn't increased because the 2-3% increases that they have been receiving over the last 10 years, but inflation has eaten away all of it. And in fact, in real terms, their income has gone down. So that's a medical profession. So if you look at others who are on salaries of 25, 30, 35,000 pounds, your nurses, your policemen, your firefighters, and all the other public servants who don't earn huge amounts of income, they will see their a huge drop in their income due to inflation. And inflation is really being fueled by energy cost, with increase in the mortgage payments. People have personal loans or credit cards. The interest being charged on that is around 30-40%. And people don't have enough income, so they're tending to rely on credit cards and other expensive methods of borrowing money, which just to pay their bills.
All right, let's bring in Mr. Rafat on the discussion as well. Mr. Rafat, how much of this that we're seeing right now in the UK is due to the consequences of the Ukraine war? Many blame the UK's economic woes primarily on the situation in Ukraine. Do you see it in that light as well?
Yes, for sure, the Ukraine war. But let me say, or treat this topic from another dimension. In my opinion, the Ukraine war impacted UK on double edges, not only as the war. Yes, the war as war and the atmosphere of war, for sure, that to increase prices, especially to explode inflation, to make lots of economic or to increase lots of economic negative points. But what happened with UK in particular, somehow we see it in the rest of Europe, but in particular in UK, what we can find, we find double edge. The inside UK, because UK seized lots of capitals and lots of assets of people without any legal base, basically. It's just administrative decisions. Lots of Russian businessmen, lots of Russian people, their assets and their properties were taken or seized at least and put under seizure by administrative decisions from British authorities. And that encouraged lots of other businessmen, especially from Gulf countries, either to transfer their money and their properties values, to put their properties value to for sale, and to remove what they have as liquid. So that impacted inside this point. On the other point, which United States made to all Europe, is the increase of benefit on dollar. When the American Federal Bank decided to increase the benefit interest. We know very well once the federal of United States increases the benefit on the American dollar, we know very well lots of capitals and lots of liquid go automatically there, as it's the most trusted economy over the world. So that made a big problem for both, for the British currency, the pound, and also to the euro. But in on UK particularly, who is playing, let's say, and let me call it, which I estimate its role in this war, is the office boy of United States, because, which is very surprising, Americans' side, who are leading the war against Russia, practically, they did not behave like British authorities behaved. They did not put any seizure on properties by administrative decisions like British made. They did not follow Russian businessmen everywhere like British made, which is very surprising. That's why they are playing, or they are taking this war on behalf of American side, but on their own edge. That which impacted UK and that which caused directly the price increase, which UK has been witnessing for last 4 or 5 months, which prices increased dramatically in all essential goods and services, the inflation, the employment percentage got increased. Also, all that because of Ukraine war, principally, yes, but because the United States of America pushed things to that more and more and did not consider the interest of its allies when they increased the benefit for the Federal Bank.
Back to London with Mr. Razzoui. We're going to use the B word here. Brexit is Britain still seeing the ripple effects of leaving the Union, and is there still more to come from that divorce?
Well, look, some people would say that Brexit has been brilliant for UK, because some people argue that we are a sovereign state, we can make our own decisions, and all kinds of other posturings that were sold to us at the time of coming out of the European Union. Of course, it has had a dramatic impact. People simply just visiting Europe from UK have to wait in different queues. It takes, instead of sort of just flying through immigration, it takes maybe 2 hours for them to pass through immigration. Then, of course, documentation on import-export, all these things have to be factored in. But I think what one has got to remember that Brexit may be one aspect of the challenges and the problems that the British economy is facing. But really, the last 12 years of austerity measures, which have been applied ideologically by this government, Tory government, which has been in power for the last 12 years, they have applied austerity measures in such a manner that effectively the poorer sections of the community have lost out, and we have our own multimillionaire oligarchs in UK who siphon off money from UK to offshore places. Have their companies located in Cayman Island or Belize or Bermuda or wherever. So all that kind of sort of shenanigans that are sort of used by the rich and wealthy in UK also has an impact. And of course, just to sort of comment on what our colleague was talking about, the Ukraine impact, if you like. Quite often Iran is often blamed by forces that are against Iran, saying that Iran is not spending its money on its own people and is supporting activities in Syria, in Lebanon, in Yemen, and so on. We, the British government, the European nations, they're spending billions and billions on the war in Ukraine, and it's being sold to us as a fight against a demonic power in Moscow. But that money should be used in our country, if you like, to ease the pressure on ordinary people so that salaries can be increased so that more employment can be created in UK. But the reality is that we have taken this option of supporting the war in Ukraine and not really looking after our own people in the United Kingdom and in the European. And this will have a far-reaching impact because cost of war can be seen in the short and medium term, but also in the long term, it has a huge impact, and that we haven't sort of seen as yet. The other point is that the austerity measures were one thing. The second was, of course, the corona casualty caused commercial crash in the UK and all over the world. For the last 2 years before the economies started opening up, we had lockdowns. That had an impact. So all things are not really converging at this moment to benefit the UK economy.
Mr. Rafat, how does this data play into the Conservative leadership's contest?
Sorry, would you say that again, please?
How does this data regarding the contraction of the UK government play into the Conservative leadership's ongoing contest right now?
Well, I think it's playing a role in the not only on the Conservative leadership, but on all UK politician scene, in my opinion, and that we could see it in the kind of people were advanced or were pushed to be prime minister. We will find lots of them, the political party. Pushed majority of them are basically, principally, used to be businessmen or businesswomen. I mean, coming from the world of business, not coming from the real political school as it's the habit for long decades now, or coming from strategic backgrounds, military or political, as we are getting used to since more than five, six decades. Since the end of the Second World War, we saw lots of faces who are coming from business world. That means the political atmosphere and the political class inside United Kingdom are convinced and very, very aware. They are in a deep crisis, not crisis, but they are on edge of crisis and they are in a deep problem. This problem will not be done, will not be ended just by some decisions to be taken, because the actions and the acts of United Kingdom and behaviors of United Kingdom toward Ukraine and or toward Russia concerning the war of Ukraine really will impact the British economy for decades. These Russian businessmen who had millions in UK, not only millions, but billions, who are employing people, who have lots of properties they pay taxes on, and they pay taxes on their capitals, and they pay taxes on their interest, etc., and they recruit services as well. All these people, I doubt they would come back soon to UK. They need real time, very long time to come back. So UK last 5-6 months acted very rapidly against them, and while was in rush, it took strong decisions. I estimate these decisions are wrong and illegal decisions, especially the seizure of properties and money of people without any judicial decisions. That was real catastrophe. That to impact a lot the investment atmosphere in any country, and does it encourage people to come back?
Okay.
So the politicians in the United Kingdom are aware of what I'm saying, and not only aware, they are convinced now. They shoot their feet somehow.
Sure.
That's why they are trying now to find a medication for that through a decision maker and rising leadership coming from business background.
All right, we're short of time now. One last question for Mr. Razvi. Whoever wins the race for prime minister in September will have a whole lot to deal with, from rising food prices to energy shortages. The question is, when a new prime minister comes, will there be enough time to avert this looming recession? Yes or no?
Well, look, at the end of the day, there's no silver bullet to resolve the complex matters of the economy. Whether it's Terse or Mr. Sunak wins, it's interesting that one of the Conservative politicians described Mrs. Terse as as bright as a 3-watt bulb. So it would be interesting to get her as the prime minister, who doesn't have enough sort of intellectual capacity to be able to fathom the problems of the economy and take it on a right course. But I think what we really have to remember is that our colleague said that Europe and Britain has shot itself in the foot. But the reality is that, as Mr. Orbán of Hungary said, that with the Ukraine war with and Russia, Europe has really shot itself in the lungs. So it's in a very critical situation, if you like. And we'll have to just see how time will tell the difficulties and the challenges that UK and the European Union are facing on the economic front.
Well, sorry to cut you off there. We're fresh out of time for tonight's program. Allow me to thank my guest, economic analyst Shabbir Rezvi, joining us from London. And also thanks to Mahmoud Refat, president of the European Institute for International Law, joining us from Stockholm. And also special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means...
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from...
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed.
His decree, though, we learn...
This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah.
Ya khaliqa kull shay'in wa waritha.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight and I'm your host Mahdi. When it comes to the different types of nourishment of the soul, just as the nourishment of the body, we have good things that will nourish our body and we have things that will damage our body. And likewise, we have mixtures and things for the soul which are a detriment to the soul and which in fact weaken our ubudiyah. And so when talking about the nourishment of the soul which increases and strengthens our ubudiyah, we find of course that the daily prayers, the different rituals and customs that we do in our daily lives, as well as the recitation of the Holy Quran, the du'as and the supplications given to us by the Ahlul Bayt. All of these are formal actions that we can do in order to provide nourishment to our soul. This nourishing of the soul with good and healthy nourishment will in fact increase and strengthen our ubudiyah. Just as when we eat good food, healthy food, our body is strengthened. But not only are the different kinds of obedience and the different kinds of worship to Allah help us in nourishing our soul. Matter of fact, when we do good deeds, when we do good actions, when we say good things, when we help one another, when we go out of our way to support a brother in religion or a sister in religion, when we give advice, when we are honest, when we are sincere, when we are truthful, when we are just, meaning even our actions can help us to nourish our soul when it comes to increasing our ubudiyah. And what is more interesting is that we live in a world where people care so much about their physical bodies. We watch what we eat, we watch how much exercise we have, we even do blood tests to make sure that our body is in working condition and is healthy. Now, doing all of these things, they are okay. There is nothing wrong with doing any of these things. And matter of fact, one should take care of their body because it is an amana. It is a trust by Allah given to every single one of us. But just as we pay attention to our physical body, we must also pay attention to our soul. We should also be careful of the things that we inject into our soul or the things that we feed our soul. And just as we would go and take a blood test to see in what condition our body is, we should take into account ourselves, what we have done in our lives and what we have done in our daily life in order to see what condition our soul is in. And so, dear friends, we must always remember to make sure that we nourish our souls with those things that will help our ubudiyah, our servitude, our worship, and our obedience to Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Salim Yusuf Ali.
We have a body and we have a soul. Oftentimes when we forget about the value of the soul and we forget about the fact that this is what's going to take us into success in the hereafter, what we're doing is we are squandering something which is very valuable. It's a very precious thing that we have. And let me give you an analogy. Imagine that you were given a big stack of $100 bills. Okay, like, let's say, you know, I don't know, big stack, this big, $100 bills. Now, there's a number of things you can do with that stack of $100 bills. Right? You can take it, you can admire it, right? You can give it as gifts to your fellow brothers and sisters on Eid. Right? But most people aren't going to do that, right? Now, let's say you have this big stack and you realize that it's gotten cold, all right? And you're looking for something to make a fire out of. And you look around, you don't see any firewood. Okay, you find a lighter and you have a big stack of $100 bills, right? You're like, okay, it's cold. I want to feel hot. Let me take the bills and let me light the bills on fire and make a fire out of them, all right? So now you're burning the $100 bills and you're making fire out of them. Now most of you, if you were to even think about it, you'd be in shock. You'd be like, how could you possibly ever think about using, forget $100 bills, even if it was like a stack of $1 bills, right? You would never burn $1 bills. Okay, what's the problem here? The problem is that, okay, first of all, how long is that fire gonna last, right? Maybe a couple minutes, maybe maximum 10 minutes, and then all those bills are going to be burnt. You don't have any left. Second of all, and this is the bigger problem, is that the $100 bills are meant to be used for something a lot more important. Just take one of those, go down to your local Walmart, and then use the rest of the change to buy some coffee, and then keep that rest of the money invested for your college, right? So the point is that that's just not at all a smart thing to use the bills for, because they're a lot more valuable than to be used in such a silly way. Now that's just an analogy for us to think about, right? But at the end of the day, it's still a material amount of money. A big stack of bills, what is it? $1 million bucks, you know, 10 million bucks. When it comes to the human being, that soul that we have is so precious. It's so precious that Allah connects it to Himself. He says, min ruhi. And Allah is infinite. Right, so the value of the soul is infinite as well too. When somebody commits a sin, right, now we're getting serious here. This is the bottom line here, and then we're going to end with this. We're going to move it to the next part. When somebody commits a sin, what they're doing is even worse than that person who's lighting fire to that stack of bills. Because after all, bills are something which is material, and here is something which is immaterial. It could rise to the highest levels of perfection, but when we commit a sin, that's exactly what we're doing. We're burning our potential. We're burning our capital. What was supposed to be is now being thrown away and burnt away. Let me just end this part of the speech with a saying again from Imam Ali alayhi salam. He encompasses the whole message of the speech in just one line. He says, "Inna li anfusikum athmanan." These are the souls that you have. These have prices to them. Okay, they're worth something. فَلَا تَبِعُوهَا إِلَّا بِالْجَنَّةِ. Don't sell your souls for anything less than paradise. Meaning that the path to paradise and the pleasure of Allah has been laid out for us, which is the religion of Islam. Don't sell yourselves short. Don't lose out on the valuable price of these souls by doing anything to move away from that path which Allah has shown you that will take you to paradise. Jalla jalalullah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website, www.parstoday.com.